Welcome back to the Umbrella Hour. This is Dr. An and Xander Kagg, licensed social worker. Xander, you have someone you want to introduce us to today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, An. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show. We're going to be talking today with Rocco Kyotos. Oh, did I say that right? Kyotos. Darn it. You said I was going to mispronounce, and I did. Darn it. Let me read Rocco's bio. He's done some really wonderful work in the world. I'm really looking forward to talking with you. So Rocco is an award-winning storyteller and community builder with a professional background in media making and marketing. He released 4 solo albums under the moniker Catastrophe and is hailed as the first openly FTM musician to release an album. Rocco is also one of the founding editors of Original Plumbing Magazine, the first print magazine dedicated to trans male culture. He transitioned in 2001 and has been outspoken, making media and creating space for trans men since then. He is currently the founder and executive director of the International Man Project and Camp Lost Boys, a traditional summer camp experience for men of transgender experience over the age of 18. He is also a writer, podcaster, and content creator for several companies, including BuzzFeed, The Cut, Spring Hill, Headspace, Spotify, Grindr, and Folks Health. Welcome to the show, Rocco.
Thanks so much for having me.
Let's do just a quick little disclaimer. I like to let people know right up front, our listeners know, when I have a personal relationship with one of our guests, I just think it helps because we might get very casually comfortable with each other. For example, I have been to Camp Lost Boys on 2 or 3 occasions. So I've had the privilege and the honor of being able to not only attend, but lead some workshops, which are really wonderful things that you put on at Camp Lost Boys. And we've intermingled back and forth over the years. I was featured in one of the Original Plumbing magazines and also in the book that you put out after the end of that 10 years that got published, really wonderful book. And I think the first time we met, let me know if you remember this, I went to the San Francisco downtown library, the Civic Center Library, for a literary event that Michelle T put on, Sister Something.
Sister Spit, but I think it was called the Radar Reading Series.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's been a while. That's when we were both living in San Francisco. I don't live in San Francisco anymore, and either do you, but we were
correct.
Then, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And then later, I actually remember when we had a more kind of extensive hangout was at, I want to say it was like 2008 at the Philly Trans Health Conference, 2009, maybe. We were both tabling. You had just had a book come out. What year would that have been?
So, well, in 2010, Letters for My Brothers came out. I think I was at the Philly conference in 2011.
Okay.
So yeah, Letters for My Brothers had just come out. And that was my first time at the Philly Trans, I think it's, what do they call it now? Wellness Conference, right? They've changed the name.
Yep. Yep.
But I had been going to Gender Odyssey in Seattle since 2005 or 2006. I had been going to that conference for a lot longer, and I used to do workshops there. And so when I showed up in Philly, I did some workshops there as well, but definitely enjoyed the table area. We bumped into each other over the years, which is a lot of fun.
Definitely. I think we got closest at camp though, because camp is just a big, you know, it's like a slumber party. So it's a big bonding experience. Lots of downtime, lots of nature, which leads to a more relaxed and expansive get to know you environment versus a conference, which is hectic and overwhelming, sensory overload. Yeah. Meeting lots of people, seeing lots of faces.
Let's just dive right in. I mean, as I'm reading through your bio, I'm sure that I wasn't the only one to notice that the kind of work that you have done has been largely within FTM community or trans male community, trans masculine community, a lot of different words that are used. In your bio, though, you do say FTM for our listeners. That's a just an older term, female to male, like transsexual. That's kind of the old school way of talking. Not everybody uses that same languaging anymore. I still do.
I've heard it's being phased out, in fact. I mean, much like transsexual was sort of abandoned by culture or even relegated to being a defamatory or derogatory term. I myself identify as a transsexual. I actually identify as a beta transsexual, which is to say the first model. I went by the Harry Benjamin standards of care. Had to see a therapist for the better part of a year to get them to sign off on allowing me to have access to medical care. just come from a different time. Social media didn't exist when I began my transition. All of my peers were men who, and by peers, I mean all of the trans men that I looked to for advice, for a possibility model is what people call it now, just to see that there was a potential for a future for me, were men who are much older than me. I like to say their names because I think it's important to, if they're not stealth, which they're not, particularly men who came before me and they generously made their transition and their lives public in a way that allowed for the following generation to kind of see a potential for a future. And these men, I owe a debt of gratitude to, one being Max Wolf Valerio. He wrote a great book called The Testosterone Files. He was also in several documentaries, including one that was a documentary short that came out that I saw early, right before my transition. And I was like, whoa, that guy's a hunk. I definitely want to transition.
Was it Gender Knot?
No, I think it was called My Name is Max or Max or something. Yeah. And then the other one, of course, oh, I just rewatched it. James is in it. Jameson Green.
You don't know Dick?
That's right. Yep. I just rewatched it. I found a link to it on a Reddit thread and rewatched and stands the test of time. Jameson Green is another man who his book came out, I want to say like 4 years after I transitioned and totally anchored me to understanding that it was basically gave me permission to be a man and gave me a blueprint of like how I wanted to be a man. And now I feel grateful 20 years later to have him in my life as a mentor and a father figure in a lot of ways. Morty Diamond also was my peer, like literally my age peer in a way that he and I have not kept up, but he was around. He gave me my first illegal shot of testosterone. We lived in a house together. Him and a few guys, we took a road trip to, I believe it was called True Spirit, up in the Pacific Northwest. What people don't know now is that there used to be a handful of conferences that were decidedly for trans men, or we didn't have the term back then, but trans masculine people. So those don't exist anymore. They fell into the kind of space that all things that are built for trans men fall into, which is the community asks for them to be more expansive and to extend to a broader demographic. And then they disappear, or the person who's resourcing them no longer has the energy to continue to resource them. And the other person that I'd like to bring his name into it is Red Jordan Arobitaux. He was much older than me. He was a prolific writer, an institution, a literary institution in San Francisco. Him and Max and I would all get coffee on a weekly basis when I was about in my first year of transitioning, and they served as role models for me in a pretty significant way. Sometimes I have this fumbling of how do you make sense of my career, because it spanned multiple mediums. I was a musician. I was a poet. Those two things make sense together. And then I made a magazine, which is like sort of makes sense. And then I went on to do marketing and all these other things. But the major through line for me has been this art-centered anchor to and for trans men. I love trans men. I think trans men are the most beautiful. If I were to distill trans male culture, I think it's the culture of just wanting to be a good boy. And I don't mean that in like the BOI kind of boy, but we all are service-oriented dogs. And I don't mean to call us dogs, but how dogs just want to serve in that way. There is a similar vibration of trans men just wanting to be good and wanting to be of service that, that's a broad generalization. We can't say that that's true of all trans men. But if I were to distill the culture of trans maleness, that is it. And I'll use camp as one example. This last camp, I think, Xander, you were there. I was doing COVID tests as people were coming in. And usually we have this big circle that forms after dinner the first night where we all get to know each other and we have icebreakers and everyone puts themselves in a circle per direction. So someone will say, let's all circle up and get ready to do this thing. And I was pulled away. So nobody had said it, but when I was done, I was about a half hour late. And when I was done and came to where we were supposed to gather, everyone was already in a circle patiently waiting. And I just thought, this is trans male culture. Everyone knows what to do and they take care. They will literally trip over each other to help someone else. Oh, I can help you. I'll be of service. So I just love trans men. And I think that now that I'm 43 and 23 years into my transition, I can say resolutely and without the fear of the community asking me to be of service to something larger than just trans men, that my heart belongs to and my service belongs to trans men. And I think we don't take up a lot of space in the trans community and like the trans umbrella community. We make ourselves small and are pretty consistently thinking about how we can create space and resources and take care of other types of trans identity, trans femmes, trans women, trans masculine, non-binary. We're creating and making and providing space for others in a way that's lovely, but there are very few services, space, and opportunities afforded just to trans men without them becoming more broadly for trans masculine non-binary people. And inevitably, what I've seen in spaces that are of service to the larger kind of trans masculine identity is that binary trans male identified people are asked to be quiet and take up less space and to hold space for others. So my primary purpose and focus is to create a space that is exclusively for trans men so that trans men can be with each other, have healthy masculinity, have a sense of brotherhood and camaraderie, and put all their bags down and take up all the space. And that's what gives me the most kind of life-affirming experience for myself. And it's transformative to watch people who are so accustomed to just holding space for other people take up space in this way that it's like a relief to me to see someone, especially come in a camp when I say, you can take up all the space and don't worry about other identities because this is it. It's only trans men here. You can see this collective, oh my God, the shedding and the bags that get put down every time. I'm just like, yes, this is my mission in life.
I'm so glad that you mentioned some of the people that have been important in your life, influential in your life. It probably wouldn't surprise you to know that we have the same guys in common. And that's because, well, they were all in San Francisco. I started my medical transition in 2005. So just 4 years after you did, I was 39 years old. So that was the difference. But I used to hang out at Muddy Waters Coffee House on Church Street on Wednesday night.
Me too.
With Max Valerio and Jordan, Red Jordan Roboto and John Otto, and people would just drop in. I also like that you, it's the history of our community, and it's not very widely known, even within our own community. And so you mentioned there used to be dedicated trans man or FTM space. FTM International was the first FTM organization that held a conference. And that was in 1995 in San Francisco. And they held a conference for a couple of years. And then another group came on the line, started doing conferences called American Boys or AMBOYS, B-O-Y-Z. Mm-hmm. So that's where if you're listening and you've seen Indie Boys or Desert Boys or Beach Boys, B-O-Y-Z, it came from American Boys. They had chapters all over the country and they had Yahoo groups and they were B-O-Y-Z boys groups. And they had that other conference that you mentioned,
Spirit.
Yeah, they had True Spirit for a number of years. Yeah. And then when that went away, Aidan Key started FTM Gender Odyssey. But yep. Then within a couple of years, it was just Gender Odyssey. And I was there during that switch. And I remember how it went from being an FTM conference, just Gender Odyssey, but it was still people who, in the parlance of today, you might hear somebody say female bodied or assigned female at birth, right? There's a lot of different ways people say it. Mm-hmm. That I remember going into workshops and all of a sudden people who were at that time were genderqueer. There wasn't non-binary terminology. Right. And they would make a big fuss about the space not being welcoming for them. And I went to that conference for 10 years and it was such a dramatic change because then a couple of years later, trans women started coming and saying, there's nothing for us. And then the family started coming. And then all of a sudden you were on the margins if you were an FTM.
Yeah, which is really not uncommon. Strange. I mean, you can kind of trace that back to a lot of conferences. Even Southern Comfort I don't know if people know that Southern Comfort was a conference in the South, mostly right outside of Atlanta. And it ran for 15 years, maybe? Yeah, it was started by a trans man. And
is that Blake?
Yes, maybe a couple other trans men. And it was largely attended by trans masculine, trans male identified people. As was the Philly Trans Conference, Trans Wellness Conference. It was more trans masculine people attended that conference than trans femme. And I think now it's mostly non-binary people who attend the conference. It's interesting to see the evolution of it's a narrow focus to begin with. And then as it broadens, trans masculine people are just underrepresented in the programming and the attendance generally for these types of conferences that oh, yeah. pop up and exist. Yeah.
Well, it makes me think about in Atlanta, they had for a couple of years FTM Fitness Conference, mm-hmm. and that mm-hmm. just became, I think, just trans fitness. Or yep. And then there was in Texas, there was Black and Brown or Black and Hispanic, something like that, Trans Men Conference.
Yeah, Carter Brown started a conference he started a nonprofit called Black Trans Men Incorporated, and now yep. it's called BTAC, which is Black Trans Advocacy Coalition, and it serves the entire trans umbrella. that's how things happen. And that's why Camp Lost Boys now is a nonprofit. The Intentional Man Project is the umbrella for Camp Lost Boys as a flagship event of the Intentional Man Project. And the Intentional Man Project's mission is decidedly and specifically for trans men, so that we have to uphold the mission and that we can't derail our mission and expand to other identities. I can see a world in which we expand some of our programs or camp or retreat offerings to include cis men so that trans men and cis men can be in conversation and collaboration with each other. But part of the mission is so that trans men can experience their male identities in a way that's affirming and healthy and connected to the experience of what it means to be a man in general.
What has the attendance been?
Yeah, so I just pulled these demos too. So this is a timely question for me. The first camp was 100 men, but since then we've expanded it to allow for up to 150 guys to register. This last camp, it's the first time we sold a camp since COVID. So since 2020, and it sold out in 36 hours and we capped it at 130 men in attendance. And our demographic split is we have anywhere from age 18 to 75 is the oldest camper that's attended. This camp in particular, this next upcoming camp, we typically see between 30 to 45% men of color in attendance. This next one is 46% men of color. And with the majority of men between the ages of 33 to 45, but we have 25% of the attendees this time over the age of 45. And we have about 10% over the age of 56. So we see a decent number, which is to say, it's not just a bunch of white boys in the woods together. It's very diverse and allows for an experience that pretty much anyone, the question I get most frequently is, I'm stealth and I'm older and I've been in my transition for a long time. Is this for me? And the answer is distinctly yes. It is specifically built for men who have had that experience. And to invite this younger, newer generation of trans men into understanding that there's nothing wrong with being a man. You can be a man and be a good guy, and you can be a man without having to apologize for it. Because I think that there is a pressure now to adopt, if you come from a background of being queer prior to your transition, I think the pressure now is less. I'll say it like this. In the era when I was transitioning, I lost friends. A lot of queer women or lesbian identified people were really disgusted that I was transitioning. I remember people saying, F that, that's disgusting. You're a freak. Why would you want to be a part of this, right? I remember there was a musician, I played at a big music festival and it was for queer and trans people. And the person said, this guy's like a typical straight dude. Why should he be a part of a queer music festival? So that was what was happening in the early aughts, right? And now I think that there's a pressure, still sort of the same kind of outcry of why would you want to be a man, which then takes, you can really internalize that and it becomes internalized transphobia and man hating in a way that's really just more toxic than any type of masculinity, I'd say, is that this younger generation doesn't have the opportunity to self-authenticate and to embody who they are in the same way that I did, because there was less of this pressure to be or not be anything. It was just broadly unpopular and unknown in 2000. And now trans identity, non-binary and trans identity is pretty commonplace. It's something like 25% of Gen Z identifies as non-binary or some variant of transgender. And that doesn't give a lot of space for people who are wanting to have a more binary experience of their gender.
We are going to take our first break. We are meeting with Rocco Chaotos, and we will pick back up where we left off with a little rerun in case you are just joining the Umbrella Hour. That will give you time to catch up. We will be right back after this message.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
The station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our first break. This is Dr. Ahn, clinical sexologist with Xander Keg, LCSW. We are meeting with Rocco Chaotos, who is an award-winning storyteller and community builder with a professional background in media making and marketing. Let's play a little recap so those of you who have just joined the Umbrella Hour can catch up where we left off.
Non-binary and trans identity is pretty commonplace. It's something like 25% of Gen Z identifies as non-binary or some variant of transgender. And that doesn't give a lot of space for people who are wanting to have a more binary experience of their gender. And I think, in fact, what it does is put pressure on more binary identified men of trans experience to eschew their maleness or to truncate it or to diminish it and to assume a more he, they, non-binary, safe, I'm a man, but safe, right? So my hope is to create a space where this younger generation can feel, oh, there's nothing inherently wrong with being a man. Right? Xander, you've been to camp.
Yeah.
Sometimes, I mean, you tell me, what do you think?
Well, let me back up just slightly before I answer that specifically and say, you know, you had said earlier about when we're in mixed spaces, there is a fairly dominant message of keep your mouth shut, be quiet, make yourself small, like you said. And the problem with that is that then the people in that space, that physical space, and then people who leave the space and then talk about their experience of the space, what they miss out on is they miss out on learning about people who have been living the life that they are, if they're, especially if they're early in transition, right? The life that they are ultimately going to end up living, because it's one of those things where for the listeners, right? It's like, I have this big, thick beard and a mustache, and I've got this deeper voice. And I could call myself non-binary. I know lots of people who look like me and call themselves non-binary. And it's going to be really difficult for the world to see you how you see yourself. And so I think for people that are doing hormones, no hormones, binary, non-binary, gender fluid, whatever they're doing, I think all of us should be able to have the opportunity to go into a space and be ourselves. We shouldn't have to conceal ourselves or make ourselves small. Back in Gender Odyssey days, for a handful of years, I actually facilitated a workshop called Celebrating Masculinity, No Apology Necessary. And the reason I did that was because that one year, genderqueer people came in and started making a big fuss. There was a workshop called Boys to Men, and they made a big stink in that workshop and some other ones. And so I went to Aiden Key, the organizer of the conference, and I said, I noticed that there's some rooms that don't have any workshops in them throughout the course of the weekend. Can I do an impromptu workshop? And he said, well, what is it? What is it for? What are you going to call it? And I said, I want to call it the men's room. And I want to have it be specifically just for people who identify as men and who live in the world as men. And he was like, okay. So I put signs up all over the place, you know, the men's room, the rens, because I thought most people are going to think it's just a bathroom sign, but enough 30 something people showed up to that. And again, it was 18 to 60 something from all over the world and just living their lives as men. And I thought, oh, there's a need for this. And so the next year I came back with Celebrating Masculinity. So I just want to say, this is something that's been part of our community. So a lot of us lost our lesbian community, and all of a sudden we're thrust into this world. Well, you're a man now, do the man thing. And gosh, I don't know how to do that. And I don't know how to be a man. I don't know how to be a trans man in the world. So we need these mentors. So I'm really happy that they've been around. They've been doing what they've been doing. And then lo and behold, the next generation comes along and you're doing what you're doing. I did what I was doing. And now there's others doing all those things. But the thing I love about camp is, specifically Camp Lost Boys. I haven't been to any other camps. And there are other camps just for people who want to go to a space that's more trans masculine or just trans difference. There's different ones, but we're talking about Camp Lost Boys. And so I like it because I feel like there's really no need to do anything other than be yourself, right? So my natural state is to be very relaxed and chilled out. And so I spend a lot of time just sitting around talking to people. Other people are playing volleyball and basketball and climbing walls and going on runs. And, you know, that's just not my thing. So there's an opportunity for everybody to come. And one of the things I've loved is you've given me the opportunity at camp to facilitate some talks. A couple of years ago, I did one on faith. And I invited anybody at the camp to come to a certain place at a certain time to talk about their faith journey or their issues with their faith tradition. And it was a huge group of people showed up to that. And it ran the gamut from a couple of people had been Christian missionary type people, you know? Mm. So that's one of the things I love about camp is that I've met so many different kinds of people. We're not a monolith. And it's so clear when you go to something like this, it's a group of 100, 150 trans men, and we're from different ethnicities, different races, different generations, different political persuasions, different faith or spiritual or religious traditions, or none at all. Some of us are married. Some of us are straight. Some of us are gay, bi, I mean, poly, whatever it is. Like, I really love that even in that small group, it's so diverse. And I think that's really wonderful for people who are, because it happens, right? Every year at camp, there's going to be people who this is their first time they've ever been in a trans space, in an FTM space. And all of a sudden they're going to be like, wow, look at that dude's wearing a Peterbilt cap, you know, and that guy, he's really feminine in his presentation. And look at those guys are really into sports and athletics. And so you get to see all these different ways of being in the world. And so I think what that helps people do is figure out how they can fashion themselves. Who am I? What do I like to do? Who do I want to be in the world? What kind of message do I want to impart? How do I want to be remembered? Right? Whatever depends on your generation. You know, when you get older, like me, 57, you're thinking legacy, right? Mm. So it's like wherever you're at, and that's available over the course of 3 or 4 days. I think people can walk away going, oh, well, I get to do this my way. I don't have to follow anybody else's path, just my path. And I experienced that years before Camp Lost Boys existed, but I was fumbling around in the dark until I found that. This gives people an opportunity to just be in it for, and not just for 1 hour every week or every 2 weeks. Like I was going to discussion groups or support groups. This is a very different, more intimate experience.
Well, it's like camp, right? I think that's the transformative power of camp is you go, you meet all these best friends. A lot of people come in alone. I remember one guy came in and he was shaky and quietly whispered to me, if this doesn't work, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I said, well, what do you mean by that? And he said, I've tried to take my own life a couple times. And if I don't find what I need here, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I said to him, I'm certain you will find what you need and things that you didn't even know you need and that you will leave feeling abundantly resourced. And he did. And he left with three best friends. And 6 months later, he got married and they were the best men in his wedding. And that's not unique to him. It happens every single camp. And I think that the experience of being a trans man is not unlike the experience of being a cis man in many ways, but most damagingly so is the statistics of suicide. You look at cis men's suicidal tendencies and or attempts, and it's not dissimilar to the statistics that we know of trans men. It's something like 48% of trans men disclose or admit to having tried to take their own life. It's 43% are depressed. Those are statistics that warrant a further investigation. And it's something like the older white cis men are the most likely to complete suicide. I think when we look at those statistics and we think about the cultural outcry about toxic masculinity, I just think men are also dying under the weight, like literally dying. Men, cis and trans, are dying under the weight of the systems in place that keep us separate from each other, that keep us lonely, isolated, and quiet. And then we, in the queer and trans community, and most specifically in like the larger, broader trans community, we do the same systematizing or systemic issues that we face culturally, we put onto trans men as well by asking them to be small, to be quiet, to not use their voice, to not take up space. It's keeping us isolated and alone in this way where we think that there's a terminal uniqueness to our problems that will never be solved, that we can never be happy, that we can never live fulfilling lives. And it's because we're kept quiet and separate from each other. My hope is that as camp grows, now that it's becoming a more structured and sustainable nonprofit that will live beyond my own individual capacity to serve it, my hope is that it will, that it becomes a bastion and an oasis for trans men who have had this experience and feel alone. You know, I'll share one more anecdote. Is a younger person who had not started their medical transition came to one of the camps, and he said afterward, he thanked me for creating the space. And then he said, I can't wait to go back and tell all of my friends, especially the non-binary people in my life who are saying that there is no way that a space that was just for trans men could be anything but a toxic waste dump of an experience, that this was the most beautiful and vulnerable and heart-opening experiences that I've ever had. I cannot wait to share that with my community. And my hope is that the 100 to 150 guys that come, that there is this sort of ripple effect where people see the transformation that happened to this individual person in their life, and that they can invest in the well-being of trans men, that trans men get to have a bigger space, not just that that's our space that we carve out, but that it becomes this ripple effect of like when people talk about healing masculinity, I just think there's this power that we're wasting when we don't acknowledge that trans men have a transformative capacity to change the way that we all culturally relate to maleness and masculinity if we would only afford them a voice in the conversation. Instead of we open our mouth and someone else starts speaking on our behalf saying that we need to take up less space.
Rocco, you have an international following at this camp.
Yeah.
Are you seeing any shifts in the direction of that growing, or are there areas in the U.S. that tend to show up more than other areas?
Yeah. You know, I do move the camp. Every camp is in a different location with the understanding that it's not just the cost of camp that makes it inaccessible for people, but it's the traveling to the camp. So with reverence for that, I try to put it in a different place every time. And so the geodemographic shifts depending on where it is. We had one in Georgia, and that was a much larger contingency of men from the South. But our biggest demographic is usually from California, Colorado, and Texas. We have seen the first camp, there was one guy from Canada that came. This next camp, we have 9 international guests, 1 from Australia, 2 from Germany, someone from Austria, 3 people from Canada, and 1 guy from Brazil. So yeah, I mean, it's a big trip for 3 days to international travel like that is big, but we did have a guy come, I can't remember where he was from, but he came to the last one. I think maybe he was from Berlin. He's coming to the next one. The thing to note is that every single camp is between 30 to almost 50% repeat people from the last camp, which is why it sells out so fast. Because you go once and you're like, I cannot wait to be in this space again. And you want to just keep coming back and back and back. And for me, I just want to live there because I just think, again, it's like that sweet helper culture of knock on wood. But there's been 6 of them and we have not had one huge catastrophic blow up at the thing. Everyone really does their best to be their best and they handle things collaboratively. And I hope that kind of culture continues where I think people know how precious that space is and show up with an understanding that they can't let stupid grievances become an enormous thing that ruins the space because it's truly a sacred space. So I hope it keeps on that way.
Me too. And that's a testament also to the culture that you've cultivated in that space, right? Because there's a tone that's set from the very beginning. That's before we even get to camp, right? Before we even get there, there's information on the website. People get to learn about the culture of the camp. And then there's the emails that come letting you know camp's coming, getting you prepared and telling you things you need to bring and things to keep in mind. And then there's a lot of people are meeting at the airport or carpooling in. So you're getting to meet people before you even get there. And then there's so many activities. So if you don't want to just sit around and chitty chat like me, you can just be busy all day long doing physical activities. And so you're going to be interacting on a much smaller scale, right? Because you're going to be more active. So everybody gets to choose that. And it's truly, I think, a testament to the culture that you've set, Rocco, because we know our community. It can be a little nutty out there. The call-out culture and the polarization and the demonization of people. It's one of those things where, again, because we're not a monolith, it's going to be pretty apparent to people if they're paying any attention that there's a lot of different kinds of men in that space. And maybe they're curious about it. Maybe they absolutely reject it. They reject that person wholeheartedly, but it's not done in that really toxic public way that people do it on social media. And so my hope is that a lot of what happens on social media doesn't actually happen in real life. It's a lot harder to call somebody a name or put them down or try and get other people to pile on to them when you're all sharing meals together. And so
literally sleeping in a bunk with the person that you have like a perceived problem with, which I appreciate you saying all that. The culture is one of love and respect, mutual respect, and there is no calling anybody out. I think last time somebody at one of the camps, a younger guy came up to me and said, what do we do about the fact that white person has dreadlocks? And I said, what do you mean? What do we do about it? Just entertained it. And they were like, what should we say? Are you planning on being friends with this person after camp? And they said, I don't know, maybe. So why do you have to why not just mind your own business and let this person just exist here? Why not just let him have a break? The whole point of this camp is to have a break from all external pressures, forces that are dismantling our humanity, et cetera. So just let it go. It's not your place. It's not your. And then there was another time a guy shared that he had maybe voted for Trump, right? And this was what, and when you said there's, it runs the gamut and the spectrum. We have radical fairies who are wearing Speedos and riding like a blow up unicorn at the pool party. And like a guy in fatigues who's from a small town in Tennessee who maybe voted for Trump and is very conservative ideology. And they're all sharing a cabin with each other. And that to me is the beauty of this experience, because it's not about politics. It's not about personal politics. It's not about literal politics. It is just there so we can all have the experience of collectively putting our bags down and experiencing a relief for 3 to 4 days together in the woods. So somebody was like, he might have voted for Trump. And I was like, isn't that cool that he came to camp and that you're getting to have this experience with someone who has nothing to do with your regular experience of living in New York and being a radical queer person who's in the streets doing whatever, going to sex parties, etc. And this guy is just a married, regular dude who's wearing fatigues and making a friendship bracelet at the same time as you. Isn't that such a cool experience?
Yeah, it's like you could say to somebody, huh, maybe you're curious about why.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'd love to talk to you about it. Let's not go crazy. I mean, I've never seen anybody wear a Make America Great Again hat. So, I mean, people sure. are. But at the same time, I would say that there are people who are very public about their feelings and thoughts about things that would be considered more on the far left. But people that would be more on the conservative side, I think, are a little more conscientious about not drawing too much of the negative attention.
We are going to take our second break. In case you are just joining us on the Umbrella Hour, we are meeting with Rocco Kayatos. We will return shortly after this commercial break, and we will run a short replay of where we left off in the event you did just join the Umbrella Hour.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our second commercial break.
But at the same time, I would say there are people who are very public about their feelings and thoughts about things that would be considered more on the far left. But people that would be more on the conservative side, I think, are a little more conscientious about not drawing too much of the negative attention. But quite honestly, you know, I went to an event in July this year in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, through an organization called Braver Angels, which I've been involved with for a few years now. They're working on depolarization within our nation and with nation within groups. And when you sign up for Braver Angels, you say that you're either conservative leaning or liberal leaning, and then you get designated a red or a blue. And then there are people who are true independents and they're a gold color. And at this convention, there were 700 people and 90 something percent of them were wearing red and blue lanyards. So everywhere you went, you could see, oh, that person votes more on the conservative. They're center right. There's not going to be any far right fanatics at something like Braver Angels, because far right people and far left people are more invested in the polarization and then in the depolarization. I'd really love to be able to see real full transparency like that. It was so ease making, if that makes sense. Everywhere I went, into the workshops, into the dining room, everybody was wearing red or blue lanyards, and you were, oh, right. And there was a lot of myth busting. Half the black people had red lanyards on. Okay. Asian people with red lanyards on, and then people that were good old country boys in blue lanyards. So right then and there, oh, you can't tell how people look. But the fact that when we went into the lunchroom with each other, there was no all blue table or all red table. Everybody was intermingling. And I thought, this is how it should be. I don't know how you do it or if you're even interested in doing it, but I'd love to see it happen somewhere down the line, which is when we say we can truly be our whole selves, our true selves, that's it. When you're just wearing your politics on your lanyard, everybody knows, and everybody, if you don't want to talk to those people, you just don't. But there's no calling people for, oh, you're wearing a red lanyard. I'd love love to see somebody just have the chutzpah to come into Camp Lost Boys wearing a MAGA hat, because why should they have to, a BLM hat is going to show up, right? These are polarizing things. And so depending on what side you're on, so to speak. So I'd love to be able to see that real blatant transparency. I don't know if the camp is there, but I'd love to see that more.
I mean, all are welcome. I don't know about the camp either, but all are welcome. And it is a primary mission for me to make people understand that all are welcome in a way that you don't have to be taken out of this experience because someone is different than you in any way, shape, or form. Even if it's about political ideologies, it's important for me that everyone understand that they have to live and let live and let be, and that there is no call out culture at camp, because camp is a place where we get to escape that thinking and rigidity that traps us in our daily lives.
Get curious. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the Intentional Man Project. What are you intentional about, or what kind of intentionality are you cultivating around masculinity, manhood?
The Intentional Man Project right now, Camp Lost Boys, is this catalyst and the flagship of our programming, but we intend to build virtual programming as well. And the intentionality is just to allow there to be space for and a recognition of the more deep and critical thinking that can be afforded to men who have had a transgender experience, because we weren't assigned something at birth and then walked through this path of being a man with eyes shut and just received privilege in this unconscious way. Trans men, for the most part, are pretty thoughtful and introspective about their path to becoming or self-authenticating in their maleness in a way that I think that the impetus for calling this nonprofit the Intentional Man Project is that it acknowledges the deep kind of thoughtfulness that goes into being a man, particularly a man of trans experience.
I was introduced to it during the pandemic because you were having virtual Zoom gatherings, doing meditations and discussions. And are you still doing those activities?
Yeah, we're going to relaunch virtual programming in 2024. So our big ramp up right now as we become more official is all of the legal and financial aspects that go into standing up a nonprofit. So that's this year. And then the roadmap for next year is that we're offering more camps moving forward than we have before. Camp used to be a biannual event prior to the pandemic. So we're doing it 3 times a year now, potentially more. We're building towards more focused gatherings. There is a world in which if we have the capacity, resources, human and financial resources, we will probably put on couples retreat in the end of 2024. And then potentially looking at 2025, doing a blended cis and trans male retreat at some point. And then maybe just pop-ups we're looking at other countries. And we're also looking at like regional day-long pop-ups. So not these like sleepaway events. And as well as building a community platform so that folks who go to any of these events have access to being part of a virtual community. And then we'll have ongoing programming. 2020, when that all happened, we had a camp scheduled for April. So what I did was just quickly moved everything online. And then from there, just built more offerings. Also quickly spun up a book called The Mindful Masculinity Workbook, was a collection of writing from people who are engaged in that field, as well as writing exercises and prompts for people who are looking to have more intentionality and awareness around their relationship to maleness and masculinity in general. Because for me, I think I had read dozens of books about the culture of masculinity, mostly with a Western lens about toxic masculinity, which doesn't land well for me, because I think why would we generalize about an entire class of people deeming them as toxic? Toxic doesn't give any hope for solution. And so if you tell a man, trans or otherwise, that he's toxic, then basically you're saying, put on the hazmat suit and discard of this, instead of thinking about, well, what is the system that is keeping people locked into this? And what are potential solutions? And I think I got tired of reading about all of these unsolvable problems with men and masculinity and thought, well, what can I do that lends to solution? And I think it's empowering and challenging men to investigate and relate to their maleness and to their masculinity in a different way, and then start dismantle the frameworks that keep us trapped and separate from each other, both trans and cis men. I think the future version of me is most excited about having that conversation in a blended way of cis and trans men talking about it, because we have a lot to learn from each other and from our relationships to masculinity and the differences and the similarities, I think. So I'm most excited about getting to that place where trans men and cis men are collaboratively talking about how to change and shift the culture of maleness and masculinity.
Your book is on a site titled Bookswagon. I'm not familiar with it, but that's what pulled up. Is it on Amazon or?
Yeah, you can get it on Amazon. It's also the main distributor of the book at this point is AK Press, which is just like an anarcho press out of, I think they're out of Chico now, but they started in Oakland. They've been around forever. They distribute it, and I believe you can get it through Amazon as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's alarming to me to hear, but not surprising, that when Sai identifies a trans guy, I'm not as advanced as you guys. I probably never will be because of just health concerns. But it just alarms me, because when I hear you say that people say it's toxic masculinity, it just shuts the door being able to be who you are without somebody viewing your whole entire experience as something that isn't wanted or accepted. We've had such a divide, I think, since, I don't think Xander and I have actually talked about this, but there's been such a divide since the whole queer movement, which isn't regarded as queer movement now, the gender diverse movement, where people vie for that spotlight and they want all rights and denying other people equal access to rights. So the equity is no longer in the forefront of the movement. And it sounds to me this whole process at the camp is to keep that in check and to keep the equity there at all costs. That's really very phenomenal, I think, because I think that can be a hard place to be. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you can have that space and people can enjoy experiencing who they are is just incredible.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate that. Yeah, you said it best. When you deem something as toxic, it shuts down the conversation. And I think that my primary focus is to create a safe space, period, broadly, and not just for one demographic, but for all. And that comes from allowing there to be room, more room. I think the nature of space is to continue to create space more and more and more. There's infinite amounts of space. And I think that when you just said it so nicely, that the queer movement is running on a hamster wheel because we don't see that there's enough room for all of us. And so I think that's what I want at camp, but what I want for everyone in all places at all times is to understand there's enough room. If you got a spotlight on one area that you think is crowded, open the lens. There's more space right outside of that spotlight. There's enough space for everyone. And healing happens when everybody can see that and feel safe.
Rocco, it's been such a joy spending time with you. I'm glad, Xander, you have all these magnificent people you can bring to this show. I'm in constant awe of just his networking ability. That obviously, in some of these instances, goes back to his earlier years. But Xander, I have to applaud you, because I've met some of the neatest people on this program. Really wonderful.
Well, I've been very fortunate. Yeah, of course. I've been really fortunate to be able to meet a lot of really great people. Anybody who knows me, they might not think about it as clearly as this, but if people who know me know, I hang out with a lot of different people. And every once in a while in my life, I bring a bunch of people that I know all together one place. And it is a motley crew, because I do not surround myself with people who just think like I do and want the same things that I do. I do not like to surround myself with people like that. I like to have a lot of different people in my life from different generations, different forms of thought, everything different. I like that. I'm very attracted to otherness. And so I like to be around people who are doing things different than I'm doing them. So I'll just reiterate what Dr. On said, Rocco, really wonderful to have you on the show. We always say this, well, not always, but we regularly say it. We like to extend the offer for people to come back on another show in the future to update us about what's going on, something maybe you want to talk about, you want to share with our listeners. We would love to have you back.
Yeah, I appreciate you all having me.
You've been listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. We hope that you will join us again on the next Umbrella Hour. Thank you for listening.